Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine and the NATO conference at Vilnius these last days. The results are still to be pondered, but what to watch for in the coming days and weeks and months, perhaps years, given the divide between Russia and its former European customers and the understanding that the U.S. is in an election year. At the same time, relations between Washington and Beijing are extremely fragile, and the world is still recovering from the pandemic. All this I put before Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's been traveling in the South Caucasus. He's now in Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia. And you will all recall Georgia in 2008 was the scene of what at the time was understood as a Russian dispute with the Georgian authorities over certain parts of Georgia, South Ossetia and Abkhazia. These many years later, we can regard Georgia as a predicate for the larger conflict over Ukraine that now embraces all news. Anatole, a very good evening to you in Tbilisi. I visited the city, the capital of Georgia, in 17 and 18. You tell me that it's changed a deal since you last saw it. How so?
It's much more prosperous. The people, especially the girls, are dressed quite differently from the way I remember it. A lot of Russian money has come in as a result of Russians flooding out of Russia to evade military service. I mean, how much of that will stay, I don't know, but it's certainly very visible on the streets here at the moment. So it's a curious mixture of impressions because in certain respects, of course, Georgia is very, very unlike the way it was under the Soviet Union or in the post-Soviet years. It's moved much closer to the West. But on the other hand, there are now about 150,000 Russians in Georgia. You hear Russian all the time on the streets in central Tbilisi. So that, of course, has reinforced the old links between Georgia and Russia in personal terms.
The conflict in Ukraine dominated the news these last days, and I want to draw upon your most recent essay at the Quincy Institute. Welcome everyone to view it, because Anatole is anticipating what can or might happen as we go forward in a war that at this point does not look to be ending soon, but there is always talk of negotiation or ceasefire or some change of status besides other than the slugging it out on the battlefield. You identify three things that could change very quickly the present understanding of where we are. The battlefield, China relations, and also climate. I want to start with the China relations because there is a disagreement between the European Union and its members and the United States about China. How does that connect to the war in Europe, if it does, whether the U.S. is or is not conducive to trade with China, whether the U.S. does or does not permit Europe to be conducive to trade with China? What does that mean for Ukraine?
Well, the Europeans, or some of them, are a bit cautious about going too far in support for Ukraine because they're afraid that at the next U.S. elections, Trump may be elected or a Trump-like Republican, and the Americans, frankly, may pull back again, leaving Europe with a colossal mess on its hands. And so really to consolidate American commitment to Europe, the Europeans, led by the NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg, are making some verbal statements against China and commitments to reducing, you know, various kinds of particularly strategic trade with China. We have to see how far this will go, because certain sectors of the European and particularly the German economy are highly dependent on China. And of course, the Germans have to be careful. I mean, having, you know, imposed one major economic shock on their population by cutting cutting off Russian energy supplies, if they were badly to damage German industry by cutting off some investment and trade with China, well, you know, the far right party, the Alternative for Deutschland, has been making some, you know, pretty striking successes in recent months. According to the opinion polls, it's now ahead of the Social Democrats. I mean, a colossal transformation compared to the situation only a few years ago. And so, you know, Germany has to be cautious about this, but of course America has to be cautious about it as well.
The battlefield. Right now, we have no clarity whatsoever. The counteroffensive underway. Weapon systems are being debated again. The cluster munitions said to be on their way to Kyiv. F-16 talked about, ATACMS talked about. But you make the very careful distinction that in the event that there is negotiation or a ceasefire or talk of a ceasefire, European states, NATO and EU, might go one way and the U.S. go another. Did I read that correctly? And what does that look like?
That's certainly a possibility. I don't think on the whole that will come quickly. It could, but there's certainly, of course, a very great risk of that happening after the next US elections if Trump wins. But I think if this Ukrainian offensive fails, you will see much more discussion of the need for a ceasefire this autumn. Whether it will lead to a ceasefire this autumn, I don't know. But clearly, if in next year as well, there are no great Ukrainian advances and nothing else dramatic happens, then I think you will begin to get really serious pressure, both within Europe and within America, for a ceasefire. But equally, you'll have a lot of pushback against that, both within America and within Europe. Germany will split on the subject. The Poles and the Balts will push back against it very strongly. So it'll be a very, very messy picture in the West. One well-informed Russian analyst, though, I mean, who's well-informed by now? I mean, God knows what's going on in Putin's head, did suggest to me that if the Russian government was really cunning, what it would do is to propose a ceasefire itself. Say that, you know, it was bowing to the will of its friends in Brazil and India and Indonesia and China, and propose a ceasefire on the assumption, of course, that the Ukrainians would immediately reject it, the West would split, and that this would be a diplomatic victory for Russia. Though he also said that given the recent history of Russian diplomacy, he very much doubted that the Russians were, in fact, clever enough to do this.
There's a confusion here in America, and I ask if you can help me sort it out. There are the NATO nations, and then there are the European Union nations, and then there are those who are applying to the European Union. Then there are is the Eurozone, using the euro, and all of these nations describe Europe. They're not going in the same direction, and they have different leadership. So right now, leaving NATO aside, because it's a military organization from the beginning, it talks about weapon systems. The European Union, is it moving towards an accommodation with Russia and with the Ukraine conflict that is distinct from what we hear from the NATO chiefs? Is that a separate voice?
Not yet, no, because the European Union is very divided. You know, some of the East Europeans, the Poles and the Balts, are absolutely determined to press on, or shall we say, not to press on themselves, but to get America to press on and to back Ukraine to total victory over Russia. Now, that is not the view of a majority of the German or the French populations. But of course, the European Union is a collective organization. It works through unanimity. And there is no unanimity on this subject at the moment. So you have a considerable degree of drift. Now, I mean, the drift is, of course, in the direction of supporting Ukraine and trying to defeat Russia. But how long that will last if this and future Ukrainian offensives fail, I think is very difficult to say. The Poles, I think, are prepared to go on for a very, very long time. But I have my doubts about the French and the Germans.
The reason I emphasize the European Union is that there's talk of Ukraine coming into the EU, quite different from the talk about coming into NATO, because there's no Article 5 in the EU. It's an organization that is devoted to prosperity. Is that a credible outcome of this? The rump, what is left of the Ukraine coming into the EU, would that satisfy the players to, at this vantage point? We can only guess.
Well, I mean, it is what, you know, the great majority of Ukrainians hope for. I mean, it's very striking, you know, that before 2014, you had big majorities of Ukrainians opposed to NATO membership because they thought it would lead to war with Russia, but supportive of European Union membership because they thought this represented, you know, prosperity and labor movement and all these things. But the problem is that, you know, the European Union, accession to the European Union involves being able to fulfill the conditions of the so-called acquis communautaire. And Ukraine is a hugely long way away from that at present. And of course, as long as the war goes on, Ukraine can't really begin to move in this direction. Now, there have been suggestions both about NATO membership and about European Union membership that, you know, the conditions for membership should be relaxed for Ukraine. But I think you'll see a lot of resistance to that in Western Europe. I mean, last autumn in Brussels, an EU official said about Ukraine, perhaps unkindly, but still, he said, look, the last thing we want in Europe is another huge country with the political culture, you know, in other words, the chauvinist nationalism of Poland and Hungary, and the corruption of Bulgaria and Romania. And I think that's behind, I mean, they don't in public say things that openly, but I found that was a very widespread view in Brussels.
Anatoly, you're aware, and I increasingly am, that the way of talking about the EU that you just illustrated and the way we can chat about the EU, that is impossible to presume Americans understand the complications here. Impossible. NATO is not a bridge too far. We can imagine it winning the Cold War. But the EU and its many voices and its ambitions and its links to different parts, Eastern EU or the frontier along with Russia, all of that is overwhelming to America. Does the EU think about America at all, needing to explain to it how complicated things have become? Is that part of its mission, to talk to us?
John, I have to confess to you that, you know, I call myself an international affairs expert, but I find the EU very hard to understand, and I've been to Brussels a lot. I think the EU finds itself very hard to understand, you know, because, look, let's face it. I mean, NATO is an American-dominated alliance.
Yes.
Nobody dominates the European Union in this way. It is much more, I mean, the Germans have the biggest say, but nonetheless, it's much more of a confederation of equals. And it's bound together by now by a web of laws and rules and regulations, which in many ways are much more like, you know, the legal and economic code of the United States, for example. And yet at the same time, it's not a state. And so it is a difficult body to get your head around. And, you know, as I think it was Kissinger said, you know, when I want to talk to the European Union, who do I telephone? Russian diplomats have said just the same, by the way, you know, that on the one hand, the European Union is a genuine economic force, but nobody at any given moment really knows who speaks for the European Union. And that does make dealing with it very difficult.
Anatoly Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft is in Tbilisi, Georgia. That's South Caucasus. He's just come from Yerevan, the capital of Armenia, South Caucasus. And when we come back, Anatoly told the anecdotes of Russian speaking in the streets of Tbilisi, the same for the streets of Yerevan, the same, I'm told, for many capitals around Russia. The war has transformed the future for young people who have traveled to those capitals, and will they go back is an open question. But I think that we're looking at something that is fresh. The consequence of war could be positive over the balance of this century. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bell.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.